Mr. Samuel, are you there?
I am here, Chairperson.
Thank you. Advocate Mpofu, Ukona.
Ukona, I'm going to see you, Chairperson.
Okay, you sound a bit far. Let's test that sound.
Let's try.
Kaupinde is getting better.
I'm trying to do what I did the last time, which I've now forgotten what how I had fixed it. How is that?
Okay. All right. Thank you. Welcome back, colleagues.
Okay. Hello,
Advocate Mpofu. Just before you proceed, can I just ask or get an indication? You did promise that you would say that interview, the SABC interview, the Peter Ndoro you referred to, so that before they forget about it, just indicate when we could get it.
Yes, Chair. We'll get it in a few minutes. I just wanted one.
Okay. Thank you. Then, proceed. Go.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I asked my colleagues, the evidence leaders. They've already primed the operators to make it ready.
Okay. Okay. Just hold. Just hold. It is Advocate Power.
It's available.
Okay. She says it's available.
I know. Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'll go to it. Just
okay. All right. Proceed.
All right. Chair, I just want to round off a few things. Mr. Samuel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Advocate.
Yes. There's something I wanted to round off just regarding the our discussion this morning, just before we go back to where we were. Do I understand you? I'm just going back to the alleged interference. There was evidence by Mr. Kekana that not only did Advocate Mkhwebane not instruct you to remove politicians, which I think we have now shown to have been false, but that she also gave an instruction that the Gupta leaks should not be used. Do you confirm that, or did you ever get to know about that?
I got to hear about the Gupta leaks, and firstly, when an email was sent to the CEO, I think at the time, and later on to the effect that that instruction was then withdrawn.
Withdrawn by who?
I'm told, I don't recall personally it being communicated to me, but my understanding is that it was withdrawn by the public protector.
Oh, so at some stage she said you must use the Gupta leaks because Mr. Kekana didn't tell the portfolio this committee that.
Yes, she did. At least in the email that I can recall, amongst those that were retrieved, there was an email to the CEO, and I was copied in that email.
Yes. Well, okay. Unfortunately, Mr. Kekana is not here to apologize for his own sins. But I just wanted, in relation to that, were you aware that actually it was not the public protector, but Ms. Celia, who said that the Gupta leaks were not going to be of any assistance?
No, I'm not aware.
Okay. Can we go to bundle F, is this free the subfolder, item 35, page 2078.
I am at page 2078.
Okay, can you please screen share? Not that 2078 of the affidavit. It's a different one in the folder. They'll show it. They'll put it up.
Is that what you're looking for?
That is it.
On the screen?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Samuel, those were in minutes of the think tank, I think of 14th August 2017. Okay?
Yes.
Okay, if you go to item 9, I think, yeah. This is where all the false propaganda against the public protector, you know, gets generated in the media, and then it's a whole system that is orchestrated. Number 9 says the PP suggested that we approach the Premier to engage with the SIU to determine who benefited. Remember that? Okay, anyway, can you see it now in the minutes?
Yes, I see that in the minutes.
All right. And then number 10 says, PP indicated that there's nothing wrong to check Gupta leaks as well for the purposes of this investigation. You see that?
Yes, I see that.
And then at 11, it says, Advocate Celia indicated she did look at the emails on the press and went back to the financial statements to find if there's anything missing, but they did not find anything. CEO inquired about the pictures and so on. Mr. Nemasisi indicated that it's very critical to check the Gupta leaks because you would find complainants taking reports on review. And then number 14, Advocate Celia indicated that the complainant is interested in administration issues he raised in complaints, not the Gupta leaks. So here we have, am I right to summarize it like this? The public protector suggests that we must look into the Gupta leaks. Advocate Celia says that she has had checked them. Mr. Nemasisi supports the public protector that the Gupta leaks must be looked into because they are very critical. And then Advocate Celia says, no, that should not be done. Is that a fair summary of what happened?
Yes, that is.
So do you... Well, I want to ask you to apologize for Mr. Kekana, but maybe we'll catch up with him some other time. But at least you'd agree that from this evidence and the one that you have kindly added, where you say that she gave an instruction to do so, it's clear that the smear campaign about the public protector not wanting the Gupta leaks to be used is exactly that, a false smear campaign, correct?
I do not agree. My evidence is that at one point the instruction was given that we should look at these Gupta leaks, but then it was again subsequently withdrawn within some days or weeks thereafter. That is my recollection.
Okay, so your...
Just apology, Advocate Mbofu. Just a pause. Mr. Samuel, we can't see you. You're in the dark. We can hear your voice, but as a warning.
Chair, nothing has changed on my side. I'm still in the same position. I don't know. I have no idea what is wrong.
No, we'll try to see. You're in the dark.
All right.
No, we can't see you. We can't see you. We can hear your voice, but your camera seems to be off. It's still off. We can only see Advocate. Okay, try again. It was coming up.
Yeah.
Now we can see you. Thank you.
No, I had to rewind it. Sorry, Chair. Okay.
Thank you. All right. Proceed, Anwar Mbofu.
Yes, I can see. Thank you, Chair. But my argument at the end will be that, Mr. Samuel, you are in the dark anyway.
the Chair was saying it differently, not what you're saying.
Thank you.
I definitely understood you to mean that everything.
Thank you. All right. Now, I was saying that I think I'm now misunderstanding your evidence. I thought you were saying earlier that there was an instruction not to use the Gupta leaks and then it was withdrawn. Now, it seems like you're saying there was an instruction to use them and then that instruction was withdrawn. Which is it, the second scenario?
The second part, yes.
I see. So, but how can that be? If in August, in a meeting of August 2017, the public protector was saying that the Gupta leaks must be used, then at what point would she have, according to you, withdrawn that instruction? And in any event, that is not what Mr. Kekana told us.
Chair, I cannot recall when that was. All I can recall is that I don't recall being in that think tank. And for Advocate Celia to be there would have meant that I was away. And so she's the one who attended the think tank on our behalf. So
Like the inspection in loco. Okay.
No. The inspection in loco, I attended, Advocate Mbofu. And in due course, you will get proof of that.
We will. Okay. No, that's fine. Okay, on a more serious note, you would agree at the very least that the indication from the objective evidence of the minutes is that it was actually the PP who was suggesting that the Gupta leaks must be used, correct?
Up to that time, yes.
All right. No, that's fine. She will testify for herself. Do you accept that by the time the Section 7-9 notices were issued, the MEC for Agriculture was no longer Mr. Zwane?
Yes, I do.
Who was it?
I can't recall precisely, but I suspect, I think, according to my recollection, it must have been Mr. Opa Khwabane.
No, you're quite correct. So when those answers were demanded, it was Mr. Zwane was no longer in the picture, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, as far as before we go to the video, I just want to round off what we were busy with before lunch. You accept, don't you, that some of the cases that both this public protector and Advocate Mkwebane had to fight in court have actually assisted the country in getting us to where we are now? I'm talking about that was vague. Yeah, I'm talking about as far as the development of the jurisprudence in this area is concerned.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and that it is unhelpful to take the approach that you take on the so-called reckless litigation, because you cannot charge litigation the recklessness or otherwise thereof ex post facto. In other words, by the reaction of people once the judgment has been given, that by then the horses have bolted. Would you agree at least to that criticism of your approach?
You mean I cannot take the decision the comments have been made?
Yeah, no, let me explain it. I'm saying your theory on so-called reckless litigation, which you've repeated here this morning as well, is that because there is noise that happens after the case is lost, that might have an impact on the image of the institution. I mean, no, I can't debate. I can't disagree with that. That if there is noise after the judgment, it may or may not have an impact on the PR of the company. Okay, so let's say we agree on that. But I'm saying that, would you agree that that approach is unfair because it is based on what happens ex post facto? In other words, the reaction, you do the case, you are not a sangoma, you don't know that the case is going to go this way, and then it goes this way, maybe you win it on appeal, maybe you lose it on appeal. Thereafter, there is the negative reaction. You can't blame the person who initiated the reaction, or rather the litigation, as if they knew that 2 years down the line, there'll be some choreographed reaction of the media. You understand?
I do understand what you're saying, but I have a comment on it.
Yes, no, I know you do. And I'm saying that I'm going to invite you to make it now. I'm saying to that extent, your theory of so-called reckless litigation is flawed because it's backward looking, if you get what I mean.
Yes, I get what you mean.
Okay, now you can comment.
But I do not agree. Yes. You will recall that my evidence is that in considering whether or not to launch or to defend any particular litigation, one would have to look at the prospects of success amongst other things. And perhaps to go further in our situation on whether or not this is going to improve the jurisprudence. Let's go with that for now, of the office, in the sense that this is, since our inception, there had not been many cases. They've been coming, fine few in between, which were directly talking to, to the issue of our jurisprudence. And so that is not an issue that can be disregarded before the litigation is launched.
Yes.
And so it's not entirely true to say that it cannot be determined ex post facto. That is also possible in the sense that it is exactly the reaction or the failure to take those issues into account that would be the spin-off of that litigation.
Okay. Now, that's why I'm saying I'm prepared to concede some of this, but you don't seem to want to concede the other side of the coin, which is that it's easy. Hindsight, as they say, is an exact science. It's easy to criticize after the fact.
Yeah, hindsight, yes, it is easy, particularly because the judgment would then be out, and
yeah,
only then that would look at whether or not that was a wise decision after the judgment. Yeah. Yes, no, to that extent, I agree with you. But I'm saying it should also have been a consideration, especially...
Yes, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, now, you know that none of the cases, the celebrated cases, like Nkandla, the state of capture report, those cases at some stage would have looked reckless on the part of the public protector to pursue. Would you agree?
You made an example of what Nkandla and...
Let's start with Nkandla. If the EFF and the DA had not pushed the envelope literally up to the Constitutional Court, we wouldn't even know today that remedial action is binding, which, as I say, was a major revolutionary step in the jurisprudence in this area. Would you agree at least to that extent?
That is possible, yes, I would agree.
Yes, and I can tell you for free, because I was in the Nkandla case, that when we went there, we thought we were going to be kicked out within a half an hour because the court would say it doesn't have jurisdiction. So to that extent, you could have called it reckless. But because we decided to take the chances, now we have a watershed decision that is celebrated internationally.
Well, as you say, decided to take the chances and proceed. So you were there, I was not there. Yes, I accept the failure.
All I'm saying is that that decision was not reckless. It was a calculated risk. Would you agree?
I will accept what you're saying because you were involved in it. I mean, you must have discussed it then.
Okay, don't worry about that part where I was involved. Let's worry about the aftermath. You would accept that the outcome of that calculated risk has been to the eternal benefit of the country and the office itself and the public protector.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I don't know if Honorable Olomisa is here, but and I don't know how much you know about this, but if Honorable Olomisa and Honorable Malema had not intervened on the 13th of October 2016, 3 days before the expiry of the term of Advocate Madonsela, forced us to go and fight the state of capture report when Advocate Madonsela had already given up, we would not have had the Zondo Commission now. And that report would not have been released when it was. Again, I'm demonstrating to you, I don't know how much you know of the history, that taking litigation at a particular time might look reckless to you or to the naked eye, but the dividends that gets paid later are incalculable. Would you accept that?
I would accept your last statement, but as to whether that was the case at the time, with reference to at least up to that time, the presence of Advocate Madonsela, I cannot, because I was not part of those discussions.
Okay, that's fine. You can just confirm the parts that you know. You know that her term was ending on the 15th or 16th of October 2016.
I cannot recall the exact date, but yes, it was right about then.
Yeah, you know that the report was the interdict to release that report was launched 2 days before, literally 2 days before the expiry of her term.
I recall that there was a tight timeline, yes.
Yes. So anyway, that's fine. I'll call Honorable Olomisa or Honorable Malema to tell you the story, or they'll tell you one day. You'll be shocked as to what could have happened if they had not intervened. But that's fine. Let's go quickly to... The judgment. Can somebody put up the judgment of South African Bureau of Standards versus the Public Protector? While they are doing that, just to save time, Mr. Samuel, is it still your view that the Portfolio Committee on Parliament was protecting Advocate Mkhwebane?
No, it's not still my view. But at the time, that was my view.
Okay, fine. That's close. But is it your view that Dr. Matola Motshekga was part of the gang that was protecting Advocate Mkhwebane?
Well, to the extent that I was there at the time that she made an appearance to that committee, the very first one, and subsequent to that, yes, I believe that he was part of it.
And is it your position that you lost faith in the Portfolio Committee? And just
yes, at some stage I did.
You regained the faith, or is you doing it conveniently because you're in front of them now?
No, my faith was brought back by the fact that action was being taken on our complaint.
is it still your view that members of parliament were sucking up to use your words, sucking up to Advocate Mkhwebane?
Certainly at the first engagement where I was present along with my other colleagues from other provinces, that is my view.
Okay. Is that still your view?
No, it is not.
Oh, again, there was a Damascus moment.
So to say, yes.
All right. Okay. And
we've got the South African Bureau of Standards flighted for you.
Okay. No, I was still checking on whether you, as MPs, were sucking up to Advocate Mkhwebane. We're still busy with that. All right, Mr. Samuel. So before we do that, I think maybe you should tell the MPs that you no longer think that they were sucking up.
That's irrelevant, Mr. Samuel. Don't go there.
No, it's not irrelevant. How do you know it's irrelevant, Chairperson?
He's covered that point and answered you.
No, Chairperson, please, you must not do that. You must not do that. You
that can't point tell me the relevance of Advocate Mpofu.
No, you must not do that, Chief.
Because I don't know where you want to go with this, actually.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the problem. You don't know where I want to go. So let me go there. Then you can tell me to come back.
And I'm here on issues of relevance here. Because you dealt with that issue with him. He concluded and both of you agreed.
Yeah, Mr. Janji, let me just finish my question. Okay.
Question of this committee.
Mr. Samuel?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Can you explain why you held the view that the MPs were sucking up to Advocate Mkhwebane? So that we just sit on this. I thought we were passing, but now I've been encouraged to sit on it. Can you assist us? Why did you think that they were sucking up?
Advocate Mpofu.
Yes.
Advocate Mpofu, I do not appreciate what you're trying to do. You're even now making a statement that you had passed on this, and now you because I've raised this issue, you want to come back to it. I don't appreciate that. We're here on a very serious business. And I'm beginning to think that the manner in which you're raising these issues, you seem to be somewhere and not necessarily in this inquiry.
Let's not go there again.
Please stay on the points and the relevance.
Mr. Samuel, why did you think the MPs were sucking up to Advocate Mkhwebane?
Chairperson, it was their conduct during that briefing meeting. That
belief. But do you think it's appropriate to use that kind of language against honorable members?
It is innocent language as far as I'm concerned. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
With saying members of parliament are sucking up?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't recall saying it in so many ways, but I wouldn't dispute it either, that I could have used that language and meant it at the time.
I see. You stand by that?
Yes, I stand by that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. At least now we clarified. I thought you were withdrawing that, but if you stand by it, thank you. At least that exchange has been quite useful. All right. Now, can we... But, yeah. Go back, please, Honourable Operator, go back to the case. Thank you. Yes. I wanted just to show you some of the scathing remarks that were made against our favorite public protector. It's paragraph 9. Mr. Samuel, yeah, sorry. This is a case of SABS versus public protector, which was in 2015. That would be during the era of Advocate Matonsel.
Yes, I take note of that, Chair.
Thanks. And I just wanted to tell, I'll take you through some passages, and then I'll ask you the question later. Paragraph 9, yes. You see there where they quote from the report?
Yes, I do.
And then they talk about, they said, the public protector dismissed the complaint of the SABS after 11 years. The file and documents pertaining to this matter were destroyed, and therefore she could not consider the complaint. Are we together?
Yes, I'm up to speed.
Okay. Then it says, in fact, she took umbrage with the SABS for this loss of records. And then the judge says, this is an astonishing stance. If the SABS knew where there was a complaint 11 years earlier, they could have safeguarded the documents. But the public protector simply did not inform the SABS of the complaint. She ignored the fact that the relevant person who withdrew the permit was available for an interview in lieu of the destroyed documents. In other words, the public protector was being accused here of having ignored a person like Mr. Van Lochrenberg came to tell us here, a person who was available, and she just went on to make a finding. You agree with that? At least that's what you are being accused of. I'm not saying that's what happened here.
I follow the analogy, yes.
Yeah. And then it says, what makes matters worse is the public protector herself submitted her office, unfortunately misplaced the original complaint and correspondence submitted by Pradubas. The pot calling the kettle black. In other words, the public protector was the pot calling the kettle black because they misplaced documents and she had also misplaced documents. That's the second scathing remark. You would agree, yeah?
Yes, I would agree.
Right. Then it says the public protector balanced the mismanagement of the documents of the SABS with the prejudice Pradubas would suffer. Okay, that's fine. The next one is a paragraph 11. She did exercise her discretion fairly in investigating the complaints. The investigation process was unfair, irrational, and should be set aside. Okay. The important one, you know that you should know that in the Mail and Guardian case, it was said, and we were told here by Mr. Hassan Ibrahim, that the most important issue for a public protector, the most cardinal, is that she must approach the matter with an open mind, correct?
That is correct.
Without that, that's one of the reasons why we're here. We're told that this public protector approaches matters without the inquiring mind, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Now go to paragraph 14. This is what was said about Advocate Madonsen. Despite not being able to decide the first complaint, the public protector persisted in entertaining the second complaint. You see that part?
I see that.
Then it says, upon a reading of the papers, this acceptance of Pradubas's view was not done with an inquiring mind as required of the public protector. You see that?
I see that, yes.
Yeah, and you'd agree with me that that is the most cardinal accusation that can be made against any public protector.
Yes, I agree.
All right. Okay. And it is okay. Anyway, then let's go to paragraph 15. It says, upon a reading of the papers, I cannot find that the public protector investigated this matter with an inquiring open mind. In fact, my distinct impression is that the public protector upfront decided that they must protect the men on the street from this organization, worked on assumptions, and did not attempt to find the truth. That's, again, not or avoiding to find the truth is also one of the worst accusations that can be made against any public protector. You would agree?
Yes, I would agree.
Okay. And then this is another Van Lochrenberg special. It says, listening only to Pradubas with 9 interviews led to only discovering the truth as told by Pradubas, and simply because no evidence, not a single interview with officials of the SABS was obtained to prove the contrary. Again, a suggestion that this was a skewed and one-sided investigation. Agreed?
I agree.
And then, even though you said she was not criticized about law, at paragraph 18, it says, the starting point of the investigation, Pradubas was not issued a permit by the SABS to manufacture and distribute motor vehicle number plates. Starting point of the investigation was thus wrong, bad in law, and irrational. Do you acknowledge that part?
Yes, I do.
Okay, then let's go to paragraph 19 quickly. No, I already read that one to you. It's the one about it's astounding and the judge was dumbfounded and so on. Now, that you would agree is there's another case of, just don't have time, National Empowerment Fund versus the Public Protector. It's in the High Court of South Africa in Pretoria, case number 12349. There are many of these cases. Yes, paragraph 19, please. Okay, while we're waiting for that, Mr. Samuel, you'd agree, therefore, that if we had the equivalent of Ms. Bazzoni, these judgments could also have been used equally with same force as grounds for impeachment on the logic of the current motion, correct?
I would not agree. Ms. Bazzoni is present, you know, and available to come and speak for herself, just as Advocate Madonsela can also be confronted, you know, about the comments made against her. I'm not at liberty. I cannot comment on those.
Okay, forget that.
Take note of what you're saying about them, but I cannot comment in any way.
Okay,
some of them were scathing, yes.
Okay. Take it easy, Mr. Sam. Let's forget about the Ms. Bazzoni. I'm saying that anybody, Ms. X or Mr. X, could equally use these scathing remarks that I'm referring to you as a basis for... let me put it this way. These remarks that I'm referring to you could have easily set well with the remarks that I used in the current motion against Advocate Mkhwebane.
Yes, I agree. The cumulative effect.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Okay, paragraph 19. It says, okay, again, there were facts. I don't want to bore you with the facts, but and I'm asking for the same reason. They say, from all the foregoing, the finding of maladministration or improper conduct is premised upon material errors of fact, fundamentally flawed reasoning that is on the part of the public protector. The first respondent's findings and the reasoning, therefore, in respect of the issue of alleged undue delay is thus irrational. It follows that the report of the first respondent stands to be reviewed in respect of rationality and legality. Next paragraph, the subsequent findings of the first respondent, that's the public protector, were indeed flawed for what follows. Same comment. You agree that this could have been mistaken for the current motion?
Yes, it could have been relevant.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. No, that's fine. There are many other examples and we'll... I don't want to waste your time. All right, before, Chairperson, could we please go to the video? And, Chair, can I just put in something, some comment?
Go ahead.
Yes. Now, I wanted to say to both Mr. Samuel and the Chair and the Honourable Members, there are various things that come out of this, but the one that I'm particularly going to be interested in is the issue where I've accused Mr. Samuel of perjury in respect of it coming out clearly in this interview that he actually did his initial affidavit specifically with the view of influencing this process and this committee, even though, of course, it didn't exist at the time. But that's just one of the issues. Please note that, Mr. Samuel, because my questions will be around that. I might ask you about one or two other things, but that will be the focus.
I'll take note of it, Chair.
Thank you.
Welcome to the program.
Can we have the video?
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me.
All right. In broad strokes, what concerns have you raised in your affidavit to the public, to the Speaker of the National Assembly?
Peter, thanks. I have raised concerns with the Speaker mainly because Parliament is the oversight institution to which the public protector as an institution reports for its budget expenditure as well as its operations. So given the fact that the Speaker agreed to entertain the complaint lodged by one of the political parties, mainly the DA, in Parliament, I felt that the atmosphere is safe for myself and other colleagues of mine to come forward and raise the issues that are happening within the institution. We are taking Parliament into our confidence, mainly the Speaker, and raising these issues because the public protector, Advocate Mkhwebane, has access to the media and she has blocked all of us, staff from communicating with anyone. And the impression out there is that the staff is fine with whatever is happening, and the organization is running smoothly, when in fact it is not.
What has she done wrong?
Okay, I'm coming to that. One of the issues is that, she's litigating recklessly and, in a manner that leaves one with no doubt but to conclude that she's fighting her own personal or political battles to protect some individuals in the political sphere. And that is litigating and defending and or opposing or bringing action that does not help the entire institution but results in financial loss. An example is that in the financial year that we're in now, 2019-2020, we budgeted as an institution an unprecedented amount of 10 million rands. Mm. But as at the end of the third quarter, we had already surpassed that amount by almost the same. We just exceeded 20 million rands. And there's another 17 million or so still committed for the last quarter, ending end of March.
All right.
Let's get one example.
Let's get into some specifics now. The Estina Dairy Farm report, did she interfere with that one? Because you were involved in that yourself.
Yes, Peter, she did. Unfortunately, I cannot speak about those specific details. I've taken the Speaker into my confidence and Parliament, and I will only disclose those to that forum, you know, to the forum, whichever forum I'm asked to disclose them to the speaker, and then thereafter everyone will, you know, will then have access to them. I have to respect the fact that besides the process, you know, the fact that we've referred it to the speaker, there is also, you know, this matter is also before courts, because I understand she is appealing the decision that led to the review of that report.
All right. So tell us a little.
As an officer of the court, I cannot.
All right. Without going into details then, but there were some things that she did that you raised. For example, the peer review mechanism, which you called the think tank. What was that for? And she dismantled it.
Yes, that was the forum where all provincial managers like myself and all other senior managers at head office that are involved in the core function, which is investigations and reporting. That is where we met, and some senior investigators. That's where we all met at least once a quarter, or as and when the public protector determines. But this committee functioned perfectly during the time of Mr. Mushwana and Advocate Madonsela, where we gave input in terms of the law, the facts. We looked at all reports before they, you know, they got okayed to be released. She terminated that soon after she took over, so that, you know, she then has the sole decision, you know, decision on what report and how it should, you know, it should be released. We send reports from the provinces, but we don't have any control once they get to her. She doesn't come back to us to say what is. I don't agree with this. Right, please let us.
So what
she changes
saying,
them on her own.
All right. So what you were saying is that this think tank was almost, you sit down, look at the reports, and agree on law, agree on what should stay in the report, basically checking each other's work, and ultimately that guided the public protector into signing whether a report, the final report. And you're saying that she's done away with that, and now she decides all by herself what goes into a report and what comes out.
Correct. Yes, and you know, this peer review committee was, you know, comprised of people like myself who have been practicing attorneys before we joined this office, and practicing advocates. So people that know the practical application of the law and reconcile the facts to the law and so on. And she doesn't have that experience. She just terminated it so that it, you know, it doesn't go with our input. And I think that is the direct result of why we're getting so many reviews against her reports.
All right. In your affidavit, you've also said that she lacks legal knowledge. I mean, she's a whole advocate. What do you mean?
That's precisely, you know, the point. She, you know, the basis upon which she challenges or she lodges this litigation clearly demonstrates that she doesn't, you know, she lacks that knowledge. Or if, you know, she only has a, you know, the law degree. I don't think she has practiced law, which is why she makes elementary mistakes, you know, in law, and relies on advice from people that I believe are using her and are misleading her, in, you know, as a result.
All right. She says that people of sound mind should think carefully why suddenly are all these affidavits coming forward, and that it's all part of trying to influence Parliament in this process of discussing her fitness for office. Why are you only bringing this up now, particularly since you're facing your own disciplinary action for a crime that you were found guilty of?
You know, Peter, she deliberately omits to state that I've lodged an appeal immediately after that guilty verdict. I lodged an appeal. She deliberately, you know, omits to mention that, because my view is that the matter is not settled. Where the office was supposed to protect me He's persecuting me. And as far as I'm concerned, as I'm sitting here, and you know, it's been 3 years that I first got a letter from HR indicating that they intend charging me following that guilty verdict. And up until today, they have not. And this is her modus operandi. She lets, you know, she charges people and makes charges hang over their heads and wants to use them. I knew this was going to be a defense, which is why I closed it in my affidavit. It is there for everyone to read. Mm. And you know, she doesn't have the appreciation that, you know, when a matter is pending, she only uses that argument when it suits her. When a matter is pending before court of an appeal or review, you can't act on that on the verdict of that court until it has been finally ventilated.
All right. She says that she can't rule out the possibility that various people by inference, I think pointing to you as well, that you might be being used by external parties who want to see her removed as the public protector. Are you being used by any third parties?
Not at all. I'm an independent person. I've been with the office for 20 years. My concern is, you know, the institution and the people that work in the, you know, within the institution that live in fear. I don't have anyone influencing me, and I'm in this as an individual alone, and I'm hoping and I'm challenging some of my colleagues to come forward, because I know I received a lot of, you know, lots of calls from my colleagues, spending me on, you know, giving support, but I know that they are afraid to come forward. And for those of them that have promised to come forward, I'm saying, please do the right thing. Come for, especially people at head office, come forward and say what is happening. I'm not being influenced by anyone.
All right. Before this parliamentary process, was there no other recourse, no other place that you could go to if there was a concern about something within the public protector's office?
There was. And that was the ad hoc committee to which we report. But, you know, we lost faith in that committee because it was, you know, we came to the conclusion that it was protecting her. And that is the committee that was chaired at the time by Dr. Mathole Motsekga. And politicians that have been found to be questionable, like Bongani Bongo, were serving there. We once attended, as the whole provincial leadership, we attended a session where she was briefing that committee. It was the first time within a week when she got here, and that was the last time. And we saw how much they were sucking up to her and seeking to protect her. We lost faith in that process. The reason why I came forward now was because there is a definite, you know, process that is going to be done by a different committee other than the panel that's going to determine the fitness to hold office. And I believe in that in that process. I believe in the bona fides of the speaker, which is why we approach it now. The timing and everything has got nothing. It is only because of the different process now.
All right. And then perhaps finally, what's your fear if the public protector keeps her job?
My fear is that I'm going to be fired, but I'm not going to take it lying down. As you know, some things were said and done today, you know, following the reports over the weekend, that indicate that they are after me. They're now trying to find. The very fact that I'm talking to you, they want to charge me for speaking to the media. And it is perfectly my right, you know, as to who I speak to. She has the right because she has put, you know, an embargo, so to speak, by changing policies so that we don't get to speak. I'm not speaking on behalf of the office. I'm speaking against her and her practices.
All right, Mr. Samuel, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks very much indeed for sharing your thoughts with us on the SABC News Channel. All right. Well, it's now a fit.
Thank you, IT. Back to you, Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you, Chair. So, Mr. Samuel, this exposes you as the liar and the treasurer that I said you are. Do you accept that now?
No, I do not.
Okay. Contrary to what you've been telling us since last week, that your initial affidavit was not directed at this process. You said that under oath, correct?
That is correct.
And you stick by it now under oath as well?
Yes, I do.
All right. So what then were you referring to when you said, so given the fact that the speaker agreed to entertain the complaint lodged by one of the political parties, namely the DA, in the parliament, were you referring to something else or to the process aimed at the impeachment of the public protector?
Chair, I have testified that when I drafted that affidavit to the speaker, it was to initiate an investigation. And so when I got the acknowledgement from the speaker's office, it said the matter has been referred to the portfolio committee. And that is the committee I thought was going to determine, given the fact that we're reporting to that committee. Mm-hmm. That was the committee that I thought was going to, was being referred to. Mm. By the speaker and the media, you know, that was covering the issue at the time. Mm. I did not up until it came out that a separate committee was actually going to determine that we should be preceded by a panel. I had no reason to believe that there would be any other committee except that one that I knew we're reporting to.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer, Chair.
Mr. Samuel, you, as I said, I'm going to add that you're, not only are you a disgruntled employee who is full of vengefulness, but you are just an unrepentant liar. And what did you, when you said at a later stage, Chairperson, we prepared for the committee a transcript of this interview. Maybe it can be put up if it's there. But so that if you can go to page 4. Yeah, go further down. Okay, you see, I came forward. Okay, let's start from, if you go, just go a little bit down, Mr. Samuel, to, higher than that. Go back. Yeah. Mr. Samuel, can you see where we say we lost faith in that?
Say, in that process, yes.
Yeah, just after the sucking up part. Okay, so the reason why I came forward now was because there is a definite, you know, process, and you know that what is going to be done by a different committee. So there you say clearly, the reason that I've come out now is because there's a different process. Was that process not the process that we're in now?
My understanding was that it was going to be done by a different committee, which was not the original. Sorry?
No. Sorry. Sorry, I cut you. No, finish, Mr. Samuel. I'll ask you the next question later. I apologize.
I've testified that my belief was that the portfolio committee was going to be the one determining that. And to the extent that it was going to be, you know, a different committee from the one that I accused of protecting her. That's what I meant.
Yes, that's correct. In other words, this committee, which is the committee to determine the veracity of the motion, would be different from the portfolio committee, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yes. And then further down, you say, what is going to be done by a different committee other than the panel that's going to determine the fitness to hold office. And I believe that in that process, I believe in the bona fides of, you know, of the speaker, which is why we approached her now. The referral to the panel would have been to the independent panel, correct?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, to my recollection, yes.
Yes. And then it says the timing and everything has got nothing to it only because of the different process now. In other words, you are not doing it because you are being charged, but you are doing it because of this process of the intended removal of the public protector, correct?
Chairperson, at that time, and unlike now that I know the different processes that led to this, to where we are, my understanding of what was going to happen was not informed by my knowledge, because I didn't have any of the processes of Parliament. All I knew was that we are reporting to a portfolio committee, and that is the portfolio, that is a committee that will then hear whatever complaints there are, you know, against the public protector, and eventually take action thereon. So my reference to that panel and the fact that I had bona fides in the speaker was based on that understanding.
No, Mr. Samuel, don't dodge the question. Yeah, you're not a little child. So I'm saying to you, irrespective of what you're saying now, what comes out clearly of this is that the purpose, the reason why you came forward now was because of this process, which was the process initiated by Ms. Mazzone, correct?
Yes, that you know, yes. But I did not know that it was a process where which is this one, this committee. My understanding was that it was the portfolio committee. Yes.
No.
As confirmed by the letter that the acknowledgement letter from the speaker's office.
No, Mr. Samuel, now you're lying through your teeth. Your understanding was that is not
going just to be. Just a pause, Advocate Mbof. Just a pause. Yes. Sorry to disturb you.
Okay,
just a pause. To bring this to your attention, and I think everybody. So at the beginning, I would have promised and indicated that you would start and finish at 3. It's just 2 minutes past 3 now. But also subsequent to that, we started 2 minutes after 10, and the entire 38 minutes would have been lost to you, given what happened at the beginning of the meeting. And so I'm coming in to, as you said, you'll remind me, to remind you that I'm going to be giving back the time that belongs to you, which means from now on, you also have got extra 36 minutes additional to what I would have indicated to be 3 o'clock. I just wanted to indicate that. Please go ahead.
And the video, let's not forget the video. But Chairperson,
thank you, Kulwa, please.
Okay, no, Chairperson, let's make a deal. Chairperson, can I finish at 4?
Let's see how we go.
Okay, let's see how we go. All right, thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate it. Thanks for reminding me. I totally forgot, lost track of the time. All right, Mr. Samuel, I was still saying that you are now actually contradicting yourself. I hope you had time to try and find a way out of this one while the Chairperson and I were talking. So I'm going to give you ample opportunity, as they say, a long rope here. You said that your understanding was that it was not going to be the portfolio committee. Now you are saying your understanding was that it's going to be the portfolio committee. Which is the truth?
Chair, I said, and I think I said this in last week, I said if the allegation against me is that I'm lying under oath, I said I'm prepared to defend myself against that allegation. And to that extent, I really have no problem with anyone, including Advocate Bofu, laying those charges against me so that I can then defend myself of those. But in this forum, I've also testified that my belief at the time, and this is what I was assured of when I was invited to answer questions, to answer them to the best of my ability. And my best ability is that, my recollection is that at the time I lodged the complaint, the affidavit, I was not familiar with the process that would unfold. I only limited my knowledge to the fact that we were reporting to the portfolio committee. Mm-hmm. And as to other processes that were going to follow, I have no knowledge of parliamentary processes. So that they were not in my mind at the time.
Okay. Mr. Samuel Ogel, firstly, no, it's not me who's going to lay charges against you. You've done nothing against me. It's the public protector and the people in parliament, if they are so inclined. You remember when you started, there was a Miss Ibrahim who read your rights to you and told you that you must swear to God, if you don't tell the truth, you might be guilty of perjury.
I recall very well, and I take that very seriously, which is why I stood up to take the oath.
Yes,
that's how much respect I have to the process.
Yes, especially as an officer of the court, as you describe yourself.
Correct, yes.
Yes. Now, I'm saying, and I'm trying to be fair to you, because, you know, as a lawyer, this might have far more serious implications than your criminal conviction of assault. I'm giving an opportunity to come clean with us, Mr. Samuel. You've just the summary of what you've just told me now is that you knew that your complaint would go to the portfolio committee and you were not aware of any other processes of parliament, correct?
I've answered that question, Chair. I've said exactly that I was not familiar with parliamentary processes, and the only committee I knew was the portfolio committee.
Okay. So that's the only committee. Now it's very clear. So then when you're saying that there is now a different process that is going to be done by a different committee, that means different from the portfolio committee, correct?
My recollection is that, as I've said earlier, my recollection was that a different committee from the one that was in existence when we first went to the portfolio committee briefing with Advocate Mkhwebane in 2016, a week after she took office. It was composed of different members, and that to me was what I referred to.
Oh, I see. So you're talking about a different portfolio committee.
The name might have remained the same or perhaps even changed slightly, but yes, that's what I referred to as a different committee.
No, it's my mistake. So you were not referring to the one about the fitness for her office?
No, not at all.
Okay. No, I apologize. So then what did you mean later when you say, you know, that is going to be done by a different committee other than the panel that's going to determine the fitness to hold office? And I believe that in that process, I believe in the bona fides, you know, of the speaker, and that is why I approached her now. And the timing has got nothing to it, only because of a different process now. Which process were you talking about?
My understanding, Chair, of the processes at the time were that the portfolio committee was going to be the committee sitting to determine whether there was a case against the public protector.
Yeah. Okay, and, Mr. Sommer, sorry, finish your answer.
Yes, and from what I was hearing at the time, it was my understanding that then from there, the process would be referred to the National Assembly for a vote. I, at that stage, did not have any knowledge that this Section 194 committee was going to be set up. I believed that it was the portfolio committee that would have met as this committee.
So which process was going to be referred to the National Assembly for a vote?
The process of voting, to whether or not to remove her.
That's the process for her proposed removal, correct?
Yes, it is.
And that is the process that you are referring to at page one, when you are saying the fact that the speaker agreed to entertain a complaint lodged by one of the political parties, namely the DA in Parliament. That is the same process, correct?
Yes, that was my understanding, in line with what I've answered about the portfolio committee.
Yes. So when you say you were thinking of a renamed portfolio committee, you're lying again, correct?
No, I'm not, Chair.
Mr. Samuel, please. Which one is the truth? Were you referring to a process unrelated to the removal of Advocate Nkoyombane, or B, referring to a process related to her removal initiated by the DA? Which one is the truth?
My understanding is that the process initiated by the DA was the same process that was, I'm talking about at the time, was the same process that I, that would follow after looking at the complaints against the public protector. That would be the ultimate end, the result of what they would have followed from their investigation of the complaints.
Mr. Samuel, I think you must save yourself, because when you face your criminal trial for perjury, they might play this video. So I think I'll stop here so that you're not sentenced to a longer period in jail. Would you agree we should do that?
To the extent that I have answered your questions around this issue, yes, I agree. But I can't say anything more than what I have said. And so if perhaps, Chair, the implication or the suggestion from Advocate Bofu for the Public Protector is that this information or this evidence that I'm giving here is going to be used against me in the criminal court when I'm charged. I'm ready for that. I don't have any issue with it being used there.
Okay, no, that's fine. Well, I can't speak for Parliament. Well, we never know what Parliament may or may not be up to. But we certainly will take the necessary steps to ensure that, insofar as you are committing this perjury against the public protector, we forgave you earlier for the insults, but we're not going to forgive you for the perjury. Anyway, the perjury would not be, it's against the people of South Africa. It's not against her. So she's not in a position to forgive you for that. It will be taken by the appropriate authorities. All I want to say is that you are a completely unrepentant liar. And even when you are caught out, you are not even able...
Advocate Mbofu just paused.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I mean, at this particular point, this is really just amounting to intimidation and threats. Can we please stick to the directives when it comes to issues like this? Because this is now going too far. Threatening people with reporting them to the authorities to be imprisoned really is going a step too far. I'm sorry, but I really want to submit that. And I really would urge everyone to look at the directives. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Salimine. Honourable Sukas.
Yeah, I want to, I must say it's concerning because what it does do, it impacts future witnesses that are coming here and coming to tell their story. And so I absolutely agree with what the Honourable Member said.
Thank you, Honourable Sukas. Thank you, Honourable Members. Before I go to Mr. Mpofu, Advocate Mpofu, I think we indicated I'm well playing the role in checking the directives. But I think on this issue, I'm following it properly. And I'm also guided by the witness in the manner the exchanges are done. So please trust that because the only issue that is being raised in a strong way is the issue of lying and the liar, and the witness seems to be interacting with that. So I would want to exercise that approach, but I'm noting your concerns. Thank you. Proceed, Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you, Chair. The members who are uncomfortable will be pleased that I'm going to move on to something else, but it is like this, usually like this, when the shoe pinches here. What I wanted to say, Chair, is that then we must stop having Ms. Ibrahim at the beginning warning people that they will be charged with perjury if they lie, because then she's threatening them, according to this logic. But obviously, everyone knows that it's not a threat to do that. It's simply to point out to someone. That's why every witness, including the advocate Mkhwebane, was told that if she doesn't give evidence truthfully, she'll be charged with perjury. We didn't jump up and down and say she was being threatened. But anyway, let's move on to something else, Mr. Sokol.
Chair, can I please be given just a minute to respond, you know, just to say just from my side how I feel about
before
this.
Before Mr. Sample, before you respond, Honourable Herron.
Sorry, Chair, it's just a housekeeping issue. I wonder if we could have the date of that interview.
The date of the interview.
Yeah.
The video we played.
Yeah.
Okay. You would help us with that, Mr. Samuel, or Advocate Mbofu, so that we know that the actual date and the year. I mean, everything was. I also wanted to check that.
Yes, no, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Just hold back, Advocate Mbofu. Let me just hear Mr. Samuel.
Yes, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. What I wanted to say, Chair, is that, and it's purely because it affects me, and I'm glad that some of the members, came in. I would have thought that perhaps the evidence leaders would come in there. I certainly want to place on record that I felt, that I was being threatened, and that, you know. It is being ignored that I'm giving the answers to the best of my recollection. And yes, I stand by all the answers that I've given here. If it is going to mean, which is why I said, if it is going to mean that a charge is laid against me, I will stand for that charge. And I just wanted to acknowledge, Chair, I thank you for your protection and the other members. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Samuel. Thank you, Mr. Samuel. Yeah, well, let me tell you, from the side of the public protector and the issue of perjury, it's not a threat, it's a promise. But let's move to the cases that you referred to in your statement. one of those cases, because of time, Mr. Samuel, I will just pick on one or two of the cases. One of the cases that you refer to, Chair, if you can just give me 1 minute or 1 second. I just want to find my underlined version. I have one that is not underlined. Okay, I've got it. Mr. Samuel, one of the cases that you deal with in the in your as your examples is the case of CX. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And you tell us there that the that case went all the way. This is now under your topic of reckless litigation. Okay?
Yes, thanks.
This is the bedrock of your testimony here, is this whole thing of so-called reckless litigation, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. And I want to show you that that theory is fundamentally flawed and riddled with lies as well. So, according to you, when did the High Court decide the CX matter?
I cannot recall that. I do not have in-depth knowledge. I think I've testified to this fact last week that I do not profess to know the cases thoroughly. And these were brought to my, you know, I was only making reference to the comments made in these cases based on my reference to them in my initial affidavit. And so this was just an expansion of what I was referring to there.
No, I know that. There was no reference to these cases in your initial affidavit.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm telling you now, we've already established that most of this information was given to you by the evidence leaders, correct?
At my request, yes.
Yes, at your request, but that request is not indicated in your affidavit. So we are forgiven for thinking these are your statements, correct?
Incorrect, Chair. I have referred to that fact, to the fact that some of the information includes email correspondence and attached documentation provided by the committee's evidence leaders, which information they obtained from my email records downloaded from the PP's computer servers. And you know, that covers also, you know, all the other issues that are
Mr. Samuel, please. So I think these cases came from your emails.
No, not necessarily the emails. I'm just saying
that's
that
what you've just said.
I acknowledged that some of the information was provided by the evidence leaders at my request, not necessarily from the emails.
But just read something that says
yes,
received that information from emails. Please, let's not waste time, sir.
I cannot answer that question better than I
know. I know you cannot answer the question, but that's because you're making it up as you go. So please just be careful. Take your time. This has serious implications for you. Don't make it worse by compounding it with more lies. Okay. So you say because the manner in which the PP conducted the litigation, the OPP was subjected to substantial cost orders. What was that manner that she conducted the litigation which resulted in the cost order? Did that also come from the evidence leaders?
I have said, it is due to the reckless litigation that she undertook.
Yes, but I'm talking about the CX matter in particular. What was the recklessness there? No, don't put up the thing. I don't want to assist him. This is his own affidavit. Anyway, even if you put it up, it's not going to save him at this stage. Okay, that's fine. Put it back. Yeah, which were you talking about in relation to the CX matter, Mr. Sema?
If I can just remind myself from my affidavit.
Oh. Why do you have to remind me?
Why not? My affidavit is my evidence, Advocate Mpofu. And Chair, I'd really...
What
is it that I'm interested
Which part...
About?
Pause, Advocate Mpofu. Which part do you want to refresh, Mr. Samuel, so that they can fly to that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting with my affidavit here, Chair, and yes. I wanted to go to it because it's referring me to the initial affidavit. And I see on the screen.
No. Sorry, Mr. Samuel, to interrupt you. I'm referring you to the subsequent one.
Oh, okay.
The 75 page number.
Are you able to get that?
Yes, I've found that.
Just help us all. Where is it?
Page 2078, Chair.
2078. Okay. I'm told it's the one we're flighting. Okay. We're in your hands.
I've stated that the cases that I was referring to were following from that, that they follow from 26.1 onwards.
Mr. Samuel, I don't want you to read. I don't want you to read your affidavit. We've read it before. I'm just testing the fact whether the evidence in comes from you or from the evidence leaders. So reading it is not going to assist us in that exercise. So the point I'm making, and let me make it less painless for you, is that you have no clue about the ins and outs of the CX matter. You just signed because of what you found in that document, correct?
That is incorrect.
Okay, you have a clue about the CX matter. Then do you know that one of the findings in that matter had to do with the fact that the public protector had allegedly concealed a meeting with the State Security Agency, SSA?
Yes, I do.
And do you know that that is wrong? She never concealed that meeting. It's actually in the report.
Well, my recollection is that is what was
by the court.
Debated in the yes was debated in
yes that's what, in the yes I know that's what was found by the court. But I'm telling you that the evidence is that evidence is in the report. It's in the draft report and also in the I'll get you the CX report now. The other part was that. She was found to be, some of the scathing remarks were because she had referred to the vulnerability of the Reserve Bank. You remember that part?
I don't quite remember that.
You don't remember that? Okay. Well, Mr. Kekana, you watched Mr. Kekana's evidence in this committee, correct? Some of
I saw snippets of it.
Yeah. Did you miss the snippet where Mr. Kekana said that he was actually the person who wrote about vulnerability and not the public protector? And therefore, to that extent, the court judgment was wrong.
I must have missed that part, yes, because I was not sitting full time listening to those, to his evidence. I was at work.
Okay. You also, at paragraph 28, you said you refer to other subsequent judgments. Does that include the rogue unit judgment as well? 28, we'll find, it says, there have since been other judgments in which the courts have made similar findings, both about the manner in which the PP has conducted investigation, produced reports, and so on. Which reports were you referring to then? Or was that from the evidence leaders?
I think I gave this information, but at the time I could not recall which ones they were. And as I said in my evidence, the draft affidavit was in fact sent to me to comment on, and to the extent that this part is there, yes, it is my evidence.
Sorry. Yes. No. So, what are you saying? I don't understand what you're saying.
I stand by that. But at the time, it was not at issue to quote all the cases.
Okay.
I said that my affidavit does not purport to be comprehensive.
The 75-page affidavit is not comprehensive. It's a summary.
No, I said my summary of the cases referred to is not meant to be exhaustive and all comprehensive.
Okay, no, that's fine, Mr. Sam. Let's assume you don't remember all the judgments. What we said, there have since been other judgments. They don't have to be all of them, some of them. Which ones were you referring to? Just give me three.
Chair, I cannot remember those cases, but
I can't remember even one.
Yes, I can't recall even one. But what remains is that the comments made in those cases and the fact that they exist cannot be refuted.
No, it cannot be refuted, Mr. Samuel. I know them myself.
I was
involved in some of them, but. If you put an affidavit and you swear that it is your own information, you are not saying it cannot be refuted. You are saying, I, Sipelo Samuel, do hereby make oath and say that. Then you put all those things. That's what's called an affidavit. You know what that means. So if I, Mr. Sipelo Samuel, says there have since been other judgments in which the courts have made similar findings, surely you must be able to tell us at least one, Mr. Samuel. Really?
I also say, Chair, in the same affidavit in paragraph 2, the facts of this affidavit are within my personal knowledge, except where the context indicates otherwise, and are, to the best of my belief, both true and correct. Where I make averments not directly within my knowledge, I do so on the basis of information made available to me, and I have no reason to doubt the authenticity thereof.
Yes, that's fine. But then that's the whole point about affidavits, Mr. Samuel. We, as you know, you should know, we even go further and say, to the extent that there might be legal averments, there are my legal representatives. That's exactly to cover people from the corner that you are in now. I'm saying that you have not indicated that this, you say, for example, I'll give you just another example. You say, my summary above. In other words, it's your summary of the judgments. Do you understand that?
Correct. Yes, I do.
Yes. So when I question you on the summary which you say in your document is your summary, surely you must accept that I'm doing it on the basis that it says what it means and it means what it says. Correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. That's all I'm doing. So I'm saying, okay, I'm being very nice to you because I don't have time. Believe me, now this is me being nice. if I was not, you'd be very, very worried. Let's go to the CR 17 judgment. Have you read that judgment? Which is also summarized in your summary.
At some point, I read the judgment. I can't recall whether it was, you know, the whole case or just the judgment. Yes, but at some point, I read it.
Which case did you read? The High Court case or the Constitutional Court case?
Generally, my interest is at the Constitutional Court cases. I can't say that I did not read earlier versions of it.
Yeah, but. Well, that's strange because your summary is based on the High Court case.
Yes, I've just said that I can't rule out the fact that I might have read earlier versions.
Okay, Mr. Summer. So you are in the High Court case. The key issue was whether the donations of the CR17 were could be classified as matters of the state. You remember that?
I will take your word for it that was the case. My recollection is not, as I say, it's not what it was at the time that I read them. So if you say that was the issue, I'll really take your word for it. You deal with these things, Advocate Bofu, on a daily basis. I don't.
Yes. No, don't take my word for it, because the last time you took people's word is now going to end you up in jail. So I'm saying to you, in the High Court, some of the scathing remarks which you refer to were about whether the public protector had jurisdiction over ANC donations. That you must know even from newspapers.
Yes, I do.
Because I can see you've never read any of these judgments. Am I right?
You are not right, Advocate.
Okay, maybe any of them is exaggerated. You have not read some of the judgments that you rely on, correct?
That would be correct, yes.
Yes, and therefore, to the extent that you give the impression that you've read them, that is misleading and perjury, correct?
Not correct. I deny that I've given an impression that I've read these cases. I have testified specifically to the fact that I was referring to the comments made, and as far as that is concerned, in supplementing my affidavit, those comments were then were extrapolated to be put in my affidavit.
Say that again.
I'm saying those extracts, I was only interested in the extracts referring to the comments, scathing comments made by judges. And to that extent, they were then put into the affidavit.
Okay, Mr. I'm not going to. I'm trying to be nice here, and you're disturbing me. So, when you say, for example, you say at 26.1.8. This is in relation to the CX matter. You say, not unexpectedly, the appeal was unsuccessful. You can't say that when you haven't read the judgment. So that those can be your words. Those must be words that were fed into your affidavit, correct?
That's because correct.
Pardon?
Yes, that is correct.
Yes. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to be nice to you, because otherwise I'm going to be forced to say, expand on that statement when you say not unexpectedly and so on. But we all know by now that is not your statement, correct?
But I reconciled myself with the statement, which is why I signed the affidavit.
Yeah, that's fine. That much I'm prepared to accept. You reconciled yourself with the statement, but it's not your statement, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. So, really, I don't want to torture you unnecessarily. The sum total of this is that this whole thing that we've been doing with you here for the past 3 days is just a waste, mighty waste of time. And it's not worth the paper that it is written on. We're just subjecting us, you know, innocent citizens to lies, a barrage of lies aimed at revenge and insulting the public protector with no basis, simply because you were disciplined for assaulting a 67-year-old person. What do you say
I
to that?
I deny that, Chair.
Which one do you deny? That is
I deny everything that you say. And, okay, yes, it was an elderly person that I was involved in an altercation with, but I cannot vouch for his age.
Okay, I'm telling you, he's 67.
Just suppose Advocate Mbofu, who have reached our mark, I'm going to give you 10 minutes to wrap up.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you.
Chairperson, really, the kind side of me says that I should not, but I have to do what I have to do. It's my job. Mr. Samuel. Yes.
I deny that I have lied, Chair.
That's a lie. That one that you deny that you lied is a lie. You know that you have lied.
Chair, that is the conclusion that counsel is drawing from my evidence. But I deny that that should be the conclusion and that it is, in fact, the case.
All right. Do you think the people at the Public Protector's Office should keep you in an office of that nature when you are like this?
I don't know what you mean when I'm like this, but if, you know what I know of myself when I'm like this, yes, I believe they should.
Okay, let me put it nicely. Do you think that our Office of the Public Protector, such an important office, should harbor people who are capable of lying under oath at the slightest provocation?
I cannot comment on that one.
No, generally, nothing to do with you.
No, to the extent that you have made a promise, Advocate Mbofu, that you have a charge of perjury or of lying is going to be made against me, I'm not going to answer that question and thereby, yes, put myself at risk.
At risk, yes. Yeah, it's what the Americans, call you taking the fifth on that one.
So to speak, yes.
Yes. No, that's usually done by people who are lying. Yeah. That's fine.
I don't agree.
Okay, no, that's fine.
That is why our Lord...
It's your right. It's your right to silence.
Yes.
I'm the last one who will interfere with her right to silence. Yeah. No, I'm saying, Mr. Samuel, on a serious note, if the assume for now that it can be established that I'm correct, that you're making your evidence up as you go along, and it's some of it is gobbledygook that is indecipherable, then would you say that a person like that should grace the upper heights of our Public Protector's Office?
To the extent that the Office of the Public Protector is an institution of integrity, it might be questionable keeping such a person.
Yes.
But I'm not prepared to say that that person should be fired in the absence of any evidence that that is the case and it is so deliberate.
No, fair enough. So what must be done with that person? They must be hugged.
I cannot answer that one, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Well, I put it to you that let me put it this way. If you were the public protector or even the acting public protector and you listen to this evidence, how would it influence you as to whether the CCMA finding should be challenged or not?
I respect.
And please answer that question with an open mind.
Yes, that's precisely what I'm doing, Chair. I respectfully decline to answer that question because it might just be the point where I am at this present moment with the office. And so I wouldn't want to participate in a process that might jeopardize me. Certainly from the suspended public protector's view, I can see the interest in her having me fired so as to confirm or even maybe continue to be fired so as to confirm her earlier decision of dismissing me. But I can't speak of the current public protector. And in fact, my understanding is that she is objective in her thinking, and so I will respect that. And leave it to her to make that assessment. But I'm not going to assist
No, that's understandable. That's understandable. So let's leave the public protector and the acting public protector. What about the 60 million South Africans? Do you think they deserve to have somebody like you in the office of the public protector?
I certainly do. I've been in this office as has been made out for 20 years. And in all that time, there's never been an issue about me being in this office. And in the absence of anything that disturbs that flow, they certainly do deserve having me there.
Okay. Very last point until the chair stops me. Honorable Hendricks, one of the members of this committee, has raised a very important issue about collective. You know the difference between accountability, responsibility, and liability?
If I apply my mind to it, yes, I could spot the differences.
Yes. So in other words, for example, the public protector, the buck stops with her, so she's accountable for the institution. But she can be held responsible if you assault a 67-year-old person. But she might be liable for the damages caused to that person. You know what I mean? So those are three different...
All right. Responding to those three, I will agree to the first one, that she is accountable.
Yes.
As for the institution, as the executive leader of the institution.
Right.
But she would be personally liable because there's a difference between the public protector as the office of the public protector as an institution and the public protector as the head of the institution. Those are two separate entities. I would differ with you.
No.
And as to the second one, I'd need to be reminded.
Responsibility. No, I was saying you'd agree that she's not responsible for your actions, for example, if you assault a 67-year-old. Sorry for making an example that is true here. If you assault a 67-year-old person in Limpopo.
I deny that I assaulted a 67-year-old person in Limpopo. Yes, should not be responsible if that had happened.
Yes, but yet she might be held liable. You know what we lawyers call vicarious liability. She might be held liable for your actions in the civil courts as she's being sued for 350,000 rand now. So that example explains the difference between accountability, responsibility, and liability. Would you agree?
Chair, I would not agree. I think, there's misleading information being fed out to the public and, to sway the public into a particular narrative. But the truth of the matter is that the public protector would not be held personally liable. It is the institution. Vicarious liability applies to the employer, and the employer in my case is the Office of the Public Protector.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Ibambe Mkulu. Ibambe. Ibambe. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
That's where we stop.
I'm done, Chairperson. I just wanted to say that, Chairperson, the date of the video is the 17th of February 2020.
17th February 2020. Thank you.
Yes. And thank you, Mr. Samuel. I hope not to see you again. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. It's now 10 to 4. We'll take a 15-minute break back at 5 past 4. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Yes, I'm here, Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Spella Samuel, are you still there?
Chair, yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, no, I expect you to be still here because I've not released or excused you. Thank you for doing that. Before I excuse you or release you, I'm now in terms of Directive 6.16 going to ask the evidence leader to quickly raise a few issues.
Advocate Mayosi will be doing it.
Thank you, Advocate Bauer. Advocate Mayosi.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Samuel. Mr. Samuel,
yes.
You can hear me, right?
Yes, I can hear you.
I'd like to just address a few questions to you relating to the in loco inspection, which was discussed between you and Advocate Bofu during your cross-examination.
Yes.
So I have a few questions for you in relation to how you can assist the committee to clarify whether or not you were, in fact, at that in loco inspection. You testified that you were. It was Advocate Mbofu's evidence that the public protector will either dispute it or she has no recollection of you having been there. It's correct that during the lunch break, lunch adjournment today, in order to assist this process, you provided us with some photographs. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chair.
I'm going to ask our IT assistant to just put them up. Okay. Are these the photographs that you gave us?
Yes, they are, Chair.
Can you just tell the committee, Mr. Samuel, where were these photographs taken?
Chair, these photographs were taken at the Vrede farm on the day of the inspection. And I can identify all the people that are up here on that photo.
Just confirm again, that's the inspection of the 10th of April, 2017. Is that right?
That is correct, Chair.
Okay. Can you then just confirm for the committee and for the record who the people are that you were with there as reflected on those photographs?
Starting from left to right, that is Advocate Sisa Mlonyeni, one of the people that were on the team investigating Vrede. The next to him is, I can't recall his name, but he was the farm manager. He was the manager of that farm in Vrede. And then next to him is Advocate Vincent Maseko from the Free State Office, also part of the team that investigated. And then next to him, just the face appearing, is Advocate Erika Silier, and then followed by Advocate Nkwebane, and at the back, Advocate Isaac Matlawe, and the last person, the huge person, is myself.
Thank you. Can you just show the several photographs that were sent just for him to confirm? Will you run them?
Yes, that is one of them.
Yes.
Yes, that is also one of them.
Great.
Same picture with different poses.
And they were taken on the same day at the same inspection in loco, is that correct?
That is correct. I may just add that these photos, the reason why I provided them now during the lunch break, I had to ask for them from Advocate Sisa Mlonyeni, because those that I had taken did not show that I was there, because I was the one taking my own photos. And so that is why I got them now.
Okay, thank you. Can I also just canvas another issue that came up during your cross-examination? And that is the issue regarding the judgments that are quoted in your supplementary affidavit. So is it correct that the basis of the paragraphs that are cited from the judgments in your supplementary affidavit, they arose in the context of your evidence in relation to what you identified as reckless litigation? Is that right?
That is correct, Chair.
and that the citation of these judgments came about because you said that there'd been numerous cases where scathing comments were made about the PP, and that these cases themselves led to what you described as excessive legal costs that you spoke of in your affidavit.
That is correct, Chair.
You then wanted those comments, some of the comments made in the judgments and which found themselves in your supplementary affidavit. You wanted those comments from the judgment incorporated in your affidavit, and you asked the evidence leaders to assist you in this. Is that right?
That is correct, Chair.
Chairperson, sorry.
Just pause, Advocate Mayosi. Advocate Mbofu.
Okay, Chairperson, I just want to object to everything that is going on now. I just allowed it to go because the evidence of the photograph was important. As we said, we've also been blocked from getting the evidence. But firstly, that evidence, if it was truly obtained at lunchtime, as the evidence leaders are saying, they know that they have a duty to have shared it with us. You can't just spring up evidence like this. We always send them evidence even at night so that to ensure that we're not ambushed with information. So by doing this, then they're entitling us to cross-examination, further cross-examination, which we don't really want to go there. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the kinds of questions that which are being put now, which are all the witnesses who say yes, yes, yes. If Ms. Mayosi wants to testify, she must take the stand, so that we can cross-examine her. So otherwise, there's no point in just using the witness as a conveyor belt for her views. The third thing, Chairperson, is that I don't know under which procedure what is being done is being done now. We're being ambushed by everyone, including the evidence leaders and you, Chairperson, by allowing a process that is not allowed. Well, since when do we have re-examination and something like this? It can happen only when the witness has collapsed. If it's a rule, it must happen too with every witness. You can't rehabilitate this particular witness. So there's no rule like the one that is being done now. This is just an abuse of the public protect.
Thank you. Thank you, Advocate Mbofu. I'm just quickly ask Advocate Bauer to respond on an issue about the picture shared, and then I will respond and make a ruling on the other issues that you have raised.
Thank you, Chair.
Advocate Mbofu is correct. I should have sent the photographs. We had a technical difficulty in getting the photographs, and it kept on hanging on my machine, and I passed it on to the secretary to see if they could get it, and he's right. Once we got that sorted out, by that time that started already, so we should have sent it to him. It wasn't an intent to ambush. It's just a case of where I don't have email and WhatsApp on my phone, and so I couldn't get the thing to work by sending it, and so we just did that. But he is absolutely correct. There was no intent to ambush him with it. None of the questions in relation to the in-loco inspection in any event arose after the lunch adjournment.
Yeah. No, okay. I accept that.
But Advocate Mbofu, there was no intent to ambush you. There was an attempt to get the electronics to get it to be able to flight. And by oversight, I didn't give it to you. I apologize. On the question of...
That's in relation to the pictures.
In relation to the pictures.
Yeah.
On the 616...
I was going to address that. You can leave that to me. I only wanted you to deal with the fact that Advocate Mbofu said he did not have that picture that we've just flighted here, and you confirming that by the time it was flighted, it would not have reached him.
No, I should have alerted him. By the time I came in and I realized the photographs was here, he was already had started.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for raising that, Advocate Mbofu. So in relation to the flighting of the picture or the various pictures that it would not have been shared with you, because we've always been consistent that whether it is yourself or the evidence leaders, that exchange of information is important. So your order is sustained. I take that. Let me now go to the next points you have raised. You know, because you would have made points about the exercise. Me calling the evidence leader is down outside of rules, and you are checking what rule or procedure is that?
Yes.
Because that one is not dependent on the picture that would have been shown. And when I started, I would have quoted the directive. There's a directive 6.16. Mm-hmm. And let me read for completeness to you. That says, after members have posed questions, the evidence leaders may ask any questions arising or seek clarity from the witness in relation to questions posed to such witness, whereafter the chairperson shall excuse the witness from the hearings. Now, that's a directive that I pointed to. That could not be done on Friday when the members would have finished their questions. And I made a discretion that it's not, we're not going to start with that because you already doing the cross-examination. So whatever that we're doing is within the rules. There's a directive that is very specific in terms of that. So in that regard, any other questions at evidence leaders that have nothing to do with the in-local inspection in terms of the pictures, please complete them.
No, thank you, Chair. And may
Chairperson?
Yes, I've forgotten both.
I'm sorry, Ms. Myers. No, let me respond. Thank you, Chairperson. Well, on the photograph, as I say, Chairperson, even though technically I was entitled to have it, I don't want to stand on the way of anything that is relevant. As I indicated here that we ourselves have been struggling to get the proof, but we are being frustrated by lack of information from the Public Protector's Office. So actually, if the evidence leaders had done what they were supposed to do and given us the information at lunchtime, I would have been the first one to say to you, that's why I said to Mr. Samuel, let's proceed on the basis that you were there, because I can't say to him he wasn't there when I myself don't have concrete. That would be unprofessional. So I'm not worried about that. That's fine. It's neither here nor there, because all the questions were put on the basis that that he was there. And I'm not saying because we didn't receive the photograph, the evidence must be excluded and or whatever. No, that's not where I am. I'm simply saying that in terms of fairness, and my learned friend has acknowledged that they should have done so. What they really should have done is if the IT was not working or whatever, then they should have held back on those questions until that such time that we've received the information. They know that they should do that, but again, I'm not going to quibble about that. So let's leave the issue of the photograph. The second issue is much more serious, which is the issue of the what you call Rule 616. Chairperson, you know, this process is going to be I don't know what is a kind word to use. It's going to be spoiled by these procedural irregularities. Firstly, we had a situation about where the cross-examination was interrupted by questions. We've had a whole debate about that. I don't want to go into that. As a result of that, we find ourselves in this situation. Because you know that had the members asked the questions after the cross-examination as they should, then you can invoke 6.16. 6.16 cannot be invoked this way. This is an ambush and an illegal one. Because what is happening now is that 6.16 is not being invoked. You see, that's why you have to read the thing in staccato. Because it says, after members have posed questions, the evidence leaders may ask any questions arising. In other words, arising from the questions of the members. The questions that are being put now arise from my cross-examination, not from the questions of the of the members, which is completely a violation of this 16. There's a reason why those questions that are asked must arise from the members' questions. Which members' questions should succeed my cross-examination? But because the process has been converted and put upside down, we end up where we are now. So any question, if the evidence leaders want to ask questions arising from the members' questions out of 10, they can be my guests, but they must not ask questions that arise from the cross-examination which was illegally put after the members' questions.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu.
Thank you.
Before I respond, I'm going to read it again and then I respond and make a ruling.
Yes.
6.16 says, after members have posed questions in the evidence leaders, the evidence leaders may ask any questions arising or seek clarity from the witness in relation to questions posed to such witness, not by members. In other words, every question that would have been asked from the witness, that's why it gets to be a directive afterwards that we have to kind of invoke, where after the chairperson shall excuse the witness from the reading. That's a proper reading of that section. And I don't want us to be discussing it because these are the directives that have been kind of signed off that are directing this process, because it's going to happen all the time at the end of the interaction with that witness. I am going to ask evidence leaders, and they may ask certain questions. In certain others, they did not. So I just want to give that clarity. And as a result of that, I do want to proceed and ask Advocate Mayosi to complete the questions.
Well, Chairperson, I'm sorry about this. I don't want to waste your time, but let me just warn you about what you're doing. This is what happens when you make rules as you go along. So the second issue is that, therefore, it amounts to re-examination. If you are saying they can ask questions arising from the cross-examination, that is called re-examination. And if that is so,
that's not what it says.
Well, questions.
It's dealing with all the questions, including cross-examination. No, it's very clear the way it is done.
Yes, Chairperson, I'm assisting you as a lawyer. I'm saying if you ask questions arising from cross-examination, that thing is called re-examination. Okay, believe me. So if all I'm saying to you is that if there is a right for re-examination by the evidence leaders, then we're going to have the same right for re-examination. Because you can't have a process where only one side is going to have a right to re-examination. So you're opening a can of worms. To solve a small problem, you're just messing up, spoiling the process and changing the nature of the process. And therefore, all I'm saying is that you must just be aware of the implications of that, because this is yet another example of this process just being gerrymandered to suit particular circumstances, but which will have serious implications. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Just before I hand over to Advocate Mayosi, we would not have done rules as we go along these directives. At the beginning of the witness process were signed off for that purpose. And there would only be one issue that as a committee would have amended, which is 5.9. So everything in it would have been there. At the beginning, you had indicated your own displeasure and discomfort, but these are directives of the parliamentary committee. So I'd want us to just leave it there. Advocate Mayosi?
Okay. But those rules are illegal.
Thank you, Chair. Just to address the Advocate Mbofu's objection as to the manner in which I am eliciting this evidence from the witness, his objection that I might as well be giving evidence myself, if I could just point him to Directive Number 6.7, which entitles the evidence leaders in presenting evidence here to ask questions which include leading questions of any witness. Mr. Samuel, if I could go back to you. Mr. Samuel?
Yes, I'm here, Chairperson.
Thank you. We were discussing the judgments and how it is that they found their way in your affidavit. And we had ended at the point where you confirmed that you wanted certain excerpts to be put in the judgments, and you asked the evidence leaders to assist you in doing so. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And in that process, Advocate Bauer took you through the various passages in the judgments, correct?
That is correct, Chair.
And then various drafts of your affidavit were sent to you on a number of occasions until you were satisfied with the contents of your affidavit, including the excerpts of the judgments that found their way in there. Is that right?
That is correct, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Samuel. Chair, I don't have any further questions for Mr. Samuel, but the evidence leaders do want an opportunity to just set the record straight on a number of things, not necessarily for this witness, but just for the committee itself. I think it's important, Chair, for us as evidence leaders to set the record straight. There are a number of descriptions of the evidence leaders to which Advocate Mbofu has alluded to. In last week, during Mr. Kekana's cross-examination, the evidence leaders were accused of acting like we were prosecutors. On Thursday last week, during Mr. Samuel's cross-examination, there was a suggestion that we, as the evidence leaders, were seeking to lead the evidence of the judgments through him, through the witness. And it was suggested to Mr. Samuel that he was a phantom witness or a witness who is prepared to utter the words put in his mouth by the evidence leaders. Chair, we wish to just state that we as the evidence leaders do not intend to lead evidence of the judgment through the judgments through witnesses. The judgments speak for themselves, and we will deal with those judgments at the appropriate time when Advocate Mkhwebane herself gives evidence before this committee. Process-wise, insofar as eliciting the evidence of this witness, I think Mr. Samuel himself described the process that we were engaged in obtaining his supplementary affidavit and how it is that the judgments found themselves quoted in the manner that they were quoted in his supplementary affidavit. So we wanted to take this opportunity to explain those aspersions or allusions relating to the role that the evidence leaders play. And we will, Chair, through you, as these hearings play out, take this opportunity to correct this every time that this issue arises. The other issue that I think Advocate Mbofu referred to today it appears to be rearing its head again. It's his complaint that the PP does not have access to information or documentation from the PPSA because she's been suspended. We thought that Advocate Bauer had dealt with this issue quite early on after these proceedings began, and she had clarified it with reference to the letter written to the PP by the acting PP on the 10th of June, assuring her of the support of that office and inviting her to request whatever information, documentation she needed from that office. We thought that that had been resolved because I think it was reported to this committee shortly thereafter that whatever email blockages or inabilities to access information had were no longer there, and that had been resolved. We were not aware that this is a continuing problem. We hear of it for the first time today. In fact, last week, Friday, on the 29th, there was a request made to us, the evidence leaders, for some documentation in the PPSA's office. And Advocate Bauer referred the PPS attorney to the PPSA's office as being the proper place or the correct place to seek those documents. And so we are not aware that there is a continuing inability to access documentation for the purposes of the PP's preparation for these proceedings. We just thought that it's important to clarify that, and to the extent that that is so, we invite them to engage with the office of the PPSA in order to try and unlock those blockages. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Yossi, for those clarities. Before I address Mr. Samuel, I see you want to speak, Advocate Mbof.
Yes, Chair, very briefly. Chair, you know, I really don't want to do this. The first issue is that, well, I'm not going to address the other issues. The statements about the phantom witness and the evidence coming from the evidence leaders, I think the evidence will speak for itself. We stand by those statements. The issue is that about the access, it's not correct what is being put to you, Chair. It can be that we came here, this process started on the 11th of July, which was more than a month after the letter that Advocate Mayosi is referring to. And we were still stuck at that point with the issue of no access to emails. And now we must not say that is because of the suspension. What is it because of? Because if the public projector was not suspended, she would have had access to her emails. I mean, you know. So that's exactly what we've been saying, that the suspension is directly related to the fairness of this process. And as you know, Chair, in fairness, once that issue was resolved, we came back to the committee and reported, I think it was towards the end of the first week, that the issue had been resolved. But it cannot be wished away, because by that time we were midstream into this process. It was distinctly unfair for the public projector not to have had an opportunity to prepare for beforehand. The current issue is about, we've been literally since I think Thursday, Friday, trying to establish whether Mr. Samuel was present at the inspection. And that's why I had to do, because as I said to the witness, you wouldn't have allowed me to stand the witness down. So I had to do it on the assumption that he was there, but at least tell him that we're still trying to investigate this. We wrote letters to the Office of the Public Protector to get the sequence of when the witness was, at what point, because they would have a paper trail of some sort. That letter was copied to the evidence leaders. So I don't know why now there's this surprise about what we're talking about. There have been no response from the Office of the Public Protector. We were not asking the evidence leaders to respond because it's not their baby either. But we were informing them. That's why we copied them. So they can't claim not to know about the frustrations and suddenly they've discovered it 10 minutes ago. That's not true. So that those are the issues, and they are a direct result of the illegal, vengeful suspension of the public protector by the president, which was intended to frustrate her in this process.
Thank you, Advocate Mbofu, because I wanted clarity. I see Advocate Gbaup was. I wanted clarity whether this issue of access is this historical issue as you would have placed on record when we started, or whether, and because as you correctly say, at the end of that week, after the intervention, it became clear that that route would have been opened up. So I was interested whether there's a new blockage in relation to that, whether there's a new blockage, or the reference you have made is a reference that says, in terms of our access, in any case, we're in arrears, given the fact that it's a historical issue. So I just wanted, before I hand over to Advocate Bauer, to get that clarity. And if there's a new blockage, it's important that as a committee we know that and we are able to make interventions.
Thank you, Chair. We'll
You're able to just say that?
Yes. Yes, I'll clarify that very quickly, Chair. No, it's not. It's a new problem. Let me put it that way. It's not the same issue of the blockage of the emails. That was resolved.
Okay.
As we reported, that was indeed resolved. This is not about access. It's not an IT problem. It's simply us making requests. As you know, the process is flowing and fluid. So we make requests. We want this information. We want to find Mr. Samuel's traveling itinerary, something like that. And then it's not supplied over a number of times. And then the witness, by the time the witness, if we ever get that information, for example, it might be when Mr. Samuel is already gone. So it will be worth nothing.
Okay.
So it's a different problem, Cheya.
I get you. Thank you for that clarity. Certainly, it is an issue that the chairperson of the committee, I will have to also assist in it. Advocate Bauer?
Okay, I was asked, and I just want to be sure about when I was asked. I think I was asked for this very early Friday morning, and when I came in, I indicated we didn't have that information. It needs to be sought from the Office of the Public Protector. The associate from Cianejo addressed an email which I was copied in, and I said to her, put in your request and copy us in, because if you require something that we do have, I will alert you to it that it's not necessary. We've got it, as was the case with documents or judgments that she wanted to put out last night. I alerted her that we actually have them on the record. It wasn't necessary. I see that the correspondence was addressed at 9 o'clock on Friday, and a request was made at 7:20 Friday evening. Now, I will give the CEO of the Public Protector call to ascertain whether...
That request was made to the public officer, Public Protector's office.
It was sent
on Friday.
To the Public Protector's office as to whether... And I understand it relates to documentation emanating back to 2017 of what's called a subsistence and travel claim. And I suspect, and I'm not going to give evidence on the Office of the Public Protector, but let them rather tell me what the problem is in obtaining.
Okay. All right.
Appears to be a financial voucher going 5 years back.
Okay. You're done?
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, thank you for that. At least there's convergence on the issue. So we're going to even tomorrow check. Perhaps if you can overnight check that, so that tomorrow we also get an update on that issue.
Can I just check with Advocate Mpofu, has there been any other requests of the Office of the Public Protector that they've not received any response to?
I think we did send another letter on Saturday. But look, let's just deal with this one because it's relevant to this witness. No, if there's any other request, we'll copy the evidence leaders. The point, Chair, is simply this. We don't want to block this process, because ordinarily we would have then said, no, let's postpone Mr. Samuel's cross-examination so that we wait for the documents. But we don't want to do that. We want this process to run as smoothly as possible. You wanted an inquiry. We're here to do an inquiry. And that's why I had to do that kind of creativity in my cross-examination to say, Mr. Samuel, we don't remember if you were there or not, but let's work on the assumption that you were there so that we don't block the process. So we're trying to be as helpful as possible. We simply need reciprocity and for people to assist where they can, instead of blaming us and misrepresenting the facts.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Thank you to evidence leaders.
Maybe if it does assist, for what it's worth, we had sent off a request early on to ascertain, and the response that's on Advocate Mayosi's phone, which we found, which has just come in, is that we can't find Mr. Samuel's travel form at that office. We are still checking with the province. So I don't think there's a deliberate issue, but that's there. I'm not aware, Advocate Mpofu, of any letter sent on Saturday that was received. So I think they should probably have indicated that to them.
They didn't.
Okay. That's fine. Thanks, Advocate Bauer and Advocate Mbofu. We'll have to sit on that, not even beyond this witness. So thank you. I'll let us at any point in time. We appreciate that. And let's keep that spirit of all of us wanting to ensure that we see this process through. That's well appreciated. Thank you. Mr. Spello Hamilton Samuel.
I am here, Chair.
They referred to you as SHS.
That's the acronym internally, Chair.
Yes, SHS on behalf of this committee. We want to thank you. You have completed 3 days today as a witness, 3 full days. We want to thank you for the time you took and spent with this committee, evidence leader, the members, the public protector, legal team led by Advocate Mbofu. It's been a hectic 3 days, grueling, but we appreciate that you were with us until the end of it. We, as you know, you're not the last witness. We're still continuing in this process, and I'm sure that you will be watching us every day with interest as to where we're going with this. So on behalf of the Section 194 Committee and everybody, Siyabulela, Dr. Samuel, thank you very much. Anything you want to say?
I'd funubulela nam tadusar and say to the committee, thanks for affording me the opportunity to be of some assistance. I will definitely be following the proceedings from wherever I can in between going to work. And thank you. Thank you to Advocate Mbofu and Nkosi Mkhulu.
Nkosi Mhlekazi. Sabulela.
Do you want the chairperson to excuse you?
Yes, please, Chair, if the question is directed at me. Yes,
thank you, Mr. Samuel. You are excused.
Thank you
very much. Honorable members, just a quick thing. The time now is just about 4:45. We thought we want to just quickly share and get your comments on the issue of the program for the rest of this week and next week, which might be a shorter week. So that you help us in terms of contributing that. I'm going to ask Tembi Ngosi to just take us through that and so on. Tembi Ngosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, members and members of the public. Chairperson, yes, as we had indicated, that the program of the committee is work in progress and will be revised now and again. So it is the time that we have to just look at the program again to see if the committee is still happy. Chairperson, as you have indicated, we still have hearings scheduled for this week up until Thursday. Chairperson, because Chair, you'd remember that we had started on the 11th and have not had time to deal with housekeeping matters as well as other programs of the committee, Chair, to an extent that we had planned to at least on Friday have a committee meeting, but Chairperson, I want to put it to this committee that is very likely to change as this committee might proceed with another witness, which is in this instance, Mr. Pillay. So yes, Chair, sorry, I omitted that to the evidence of leaders. I will correct it accordingly. So honorable members, this week is still hearings Monday from today until Friday. You would say that tomorrow we have Mr. Vusi Mahlangu that will be appearing before the committee. We are to confirm tomorrow on who are the witnesses will be for Wednesday and Thursday. That is if the committee is done with Mr. Mahlangu tomorrow. But for now, we can safely say that for Friday, we have reserved it for Mr. Pillay. And Chairperson, proceeding to the following week, Chairperson members, you'd know that the following week starts with has a public holiday on Tuesday, so I have decided to give you a rest on Monday, in the form of a long weekend.
Honourable members, we've drafted the program that at least on Monday, just hold the Tembikosingoma, Ms. Gwandwe, Honourable Gwandwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Tembikosi, I just need clarity. On Friday, are you saying we're still having that housekeeping meeting or we're having Mr. Pillay come in?
Sorry, Honourable members, I just indicated on Friday we'll have Mr. Pillay. Yeah, we'll have Mr. Pillay appearing before the committee. So what you see there on the screen will change. Chair, as I indicated, then Monday members have time off because Tuesday being a holiday, and the committee will then resume again on Wednesday the 10th and continue the hearings until Friday. And then on the 15th Monday of that other week, Chairperson, then it will be day 18 of the hearings. And then, Chair, the meeting that I was referring to, which will then be looking at the housekeeping matters, review of the program again, and also adoption of minutes, because members would remember that we have been meeting since the 10th of June, in actual fact, because that's the last time we adopted minutes. So we have quite a number of minutes that this committee needs to adopt, and that will also afford this committee another opportunity to review the program, because members would remember that Parliament resumes on the week of the 15th. So we'll now and again have to look at the program just to see that it doesn't clash much with the parliamentary program and the committees that members also serve in, because we also now will need to make up that space for members to attend to other committees. So as it stands now, members, it runs right until the Friday, the 19th of August, is then the day that we hope that will be our last day for the hearings. And that week of the 15th is committee week. So hence you'll see that we're still meeting as per our times of 10 till 5 o'clock. And then after the end of hearings, members will then have 3 days of just deliberating on the evidence that was presented before this committee, before we take time off as the supporting staff of 3 weeks to then work on the report of this committee, where members will then be taken through the first draft on the 19th of September. And we hope that by the 23rd of September, we'll be adopting the first draft report, which would then be sent to Advocate Khwebane. Before the committee then looks at the report again on the 21 of October, after we have received responses from Advocate Mkwebana, so that members can be taken through those reports. And we hope that the 24th of October would be the date the committee would be adopting its final report for tabling to the National Assembly. Members, as Chairperson has indicated, that the program is work in progress, but that is the program that we're tabling to you now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just brief comments, just open so that I can see the virtual. Initially, this Thursday and Friday would not have been in the program that we've adopted. So it was important that as we procedurally work, that gets to your attention. But this is a very evolving process, very dynamic, because even the August kind of hearings might be extended, given the fact that we're still with evidence leaders here from Advocate Mbofu and their team about some of the people they would want to bring. So our program is likely to therefore change in that regard. So I want colleagues to understand it in that way, and further comments will be well appreciated. Evidence leaders will have their input, and we expect that whatever requirements the legal team of the public protector has, we will also take that into account. Thank you. I see the hand of Advocate Mbofu.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, no, you've covered me mostly, Chair, about the dynamic nature of the process. I just wanted to make two quick remarks. One is, if you will excuse me for tomorrow morning, Chair, I won't be here. There's a commitment that I could not get out of. But my my team will be here and Mr. Shabalala will be leading the team until I get back. So that's just the one thing. The second one is that we, because of what you've said, I'm proposing that I think on the 10th, maybe when we sit, because we will be in Cape Town, we should have that back room that everyone has been talking about between the evidence leader and the self-chair and us, just so that we can have a better sense of what's likely to happen, so that when you have your meeting, at least you would have had that kind of input, because we'll also have a sense of how many witnesses are likely to be called, how many witnesses we're going to subpoena, and that kind of thing. The other thing, Chair, is that we are available. We don't want time because it's a holiday. We're here available on the 8th and even on the public holiday. On the public holiday, we'll be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. I know that's on a lighter note.
Yes.
Thank you. Any comment, members? None. As we're saying, we're working on it so we can update you every day if there's any drastic changes, and we'll have a proper discussion with evidence leaders. And we take Advocate Mpofu's suggestion. We'll work on those things. If there's nothing, members, we are going to adjourn our meeting at that point. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow at 10 when we have evidence led on the witness, Mr. Vusi Mahlangu. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Was the witness up at NADC?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.